Today on the Matt Walsh Show, after a new law was passed in Michigan this week, commercial surrogacy is now legal everywhere in the United States, even as it's banned in many other countries. We'll talk about commercial surrogacy and why it is the most dehumanizing practice this side of slavery. Also, conservatives celebrated Daily Show host for criticizing DEI, but that's because they didn't actually listen to his criticism. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken wants to accept Ukraine into NATO, which will bring about a world war and the deaths of millions of people. In our daily cancellation, a major news publication has figured out which group is the most affected by climate change, and it's a very oddly specific group. We'll talk about all that and more today on The Matt Walsh Show. You know, $20 barely gets you anything these days. You can't get a burger and fries for less than that. But do you know what $20 will get you? From the cell phone company I use, Pure Talk, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data for just $20 a month. Pure Talk gives you the same quality of service as your current cell phone provider, but for half the cost. The average family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts, no activation fees. You can switch to Pure Talk and keep the phone and phone number you currently use. Yeah, or you can take advantage of their great deals on the latest iPhones and Androids. Making the switch is incredibly easy. Their U.S. customer service team can help you join Pure Talk in as little as 10 minutes. Choose to spend your hard-earned money with a wireless company that shares your values, supports our military and veterans, creates American jobs, and refuses to advertise on fake news networks. Stop spending ridiculous amounts on your phone plan. Go to puretalk.com/Walsh right now. My listeners can get an additional 50% off their first month. That's puretalk.com/Walsh. You know, it's not easy to find examples of practices that are legal everywhere in the United States, but also banned in Canada and most of Europe on moral grounds. Usually it works the other way around. Canada doesn't place any restrictions whatsoever on abortion, for example. The government will actually pay its citizens to kill their children at any point in the mother's pregnancy. But in the U.S., in many states at least, there are some limits on that kind of barbarism. Meanwhile, in Europe, as I discussed yesterday, and in Canada, there's an extremely permissive attitude toward euthanasia. It's easy for young adults to get their doctors to kill them in, say, the Netherlands, even when they don't have any kind of terminal illness. But in the U.S., killing patients for no reason is still frowned upon most of the time by most major medical associations, for now, anyway. So in general, we are more restrictive when it comes to most immoral and unethical medical procedures, with some glaring exceptions. And Canada and Europe take the opposite approach most of the time. But there's a few glaring exceptions to that rule, and here's one. It concerns commercial surrogacy, or the act of paying a woman to carry someone else's baby, usually via in vitro fertilization. And this is distinct from so-called altruistic surrogacy, where there's no profit motive, yet still nearly as many ethical problems with the altruistic variety, despite the name. Commercial surrogacy is legally equated with human trafficking by the EU, because it provides significant financial incentives for women to rent out their bodies to strangers. So they ban it, and the same is true in Canada. But it's not true in the U.S. This week, the state of Michigan says that it became the last state in the union to decriminalize commercial surrogacy. In other words, in all 50 states, you can now rent a woman's body and use it to carry your child without suffering any criminal penalties for it. That seems like it can't possibly be true, but it is, according to Michigan's governor anyway. Her office put out a statement saying that Michigan had been, quote, the only state in the nation to criminalize surrogacy contracts. And to be clear, there are still several states that say they won't enforce commercial surrogacy agreements, but broad criminal bans don't apply, as far as I can tell. And that's extremely good news for the surrogacy industry, which is worth around $14 billion as of 2022. In 10 years, a little more than 10 years, by 2033, analysts expect that the surrogacy industry will explode in value to $129 billion, an increase of about 900% in just a decade. Now, for perspective, the global weight loss market, which is obviously gigantic, no pun intended, is valued around $140 billion. So we're talking about surrogacy being roughly as big as the weight loss industry in just a few years' time. So you'll be seeing surrogacy ads as often as you see Ozempic commercials. Now, there are all kinds of reasons why the industry is doing so well. One of them is that infertility is on the rise. Roughly 1 in 10 men and women who are at childbearing age are infertile in this country. In the 1950s, worldwide, each woman had an average of 5 children. That number is now down to 2 children, and it's falling further. Now, I've outlined some of the reasons for the infertility crisis in the past. Suffice it to say, It's something that most powerful left-wing activist groups in the country, including Planned Parenthood, have been hoping to achieve for quite some time explicitly. They explicitly want to depopulate the earth. So they welcome the fact that sperm counts, for example, have dropped 38% in a decade. They're happy to see more women killing their children, more men removed from the gene pool. But the problem here is bigger than infertility, because surrogacy is not an appropriate or moral or justifiable response to infertility in any event. Surrogacy, especially commercial surrogacy, is arguably the most direct form of human commodification this side of slavery. It is the purchasing and renting of human bodies, organs, and body parts. And that's true regardless of your motivation for doing it. And we don't allow that kind of transaction in almost any other context. Federal law prohibits you from selling your organs on eBay. You can't do that. Virtually every jurisdiction in this country outlaws prostitution. People are not chattel, and we generally recognize that. But in this one case, it's allowed, because otherwise we're told that infertile couples and gay men wouldn't be able to have children. Therefore, it's worth the sacrifice of human embryos. It's worth turning a handful of poor countries like Georgia and Ukraine into surrogacy hubs. The women in those countries, are selling their bodies for rent to foreigners who are looking for a lower rate compared to what they find in the United States. Because, when you're looking to rent a woman's body, you shop around for the best deal you can find. And a lot of couples, particularly gay couples, are taking advantage of those discount offers. Now, you might remember that during the gay marriage debate, we heard the familiar line that two consenting adults should be able to do whatever they want. They're not hurting anyone. But that was never true. And it was always obvious that it was never true. But surrogacy now makes that extremely clear. Surrogacy deprives children of their mothers. It robs them of a connection that is hardwired from birth, a connection that is necessary. No matter how much propaganda you force on children, no matter how many times they hear the lie that having two fathers is completely normal and natural, they know it's not true. No matter how often we insist that, you can replace a mom with another man. A dad and a dad is the same thing as a mom and a dad. It's the same deal. No matter how often we lie about that, it is not true. There's a video circulating online right now that makes this point tragically clear. It's footage of a surrogate mother wishing her child a happy birthday. And this is a mother who apparently sold her eggs a few years ago to a couple of gay guys and only sees her daughter through an occasional video call. And here's one of those calls. Watch.
I wanted to wish you a happy birthday. And so does Malik. He says happy birthday also. I hope you had a wonderful fourth birthday. I really love looking at all your pictures on Instagram, and you're growing up to be such a beautiful and creative, sparkling light. And I know your daddies love you so much. So happy birthday, baby girl. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
I love you, Mommy.
What did you say? Okay, you can say that to her. What do you want to say?
I love you, Mommy. Thank you.
Now, as a parent, I have to say that that clip angers me at the deepest levels of my soul. I mean, because the thought of my own children being deprived of their mother it's horrifying. For a child to lose his mother would be losing a part of himself. It's like losing a limb, but worse. And yet this is done to children intentionally, and all for the sake of satisfying the wishes of gay couples. That clip, by the way, is from Surrogacy Concern, which is a group in the UK that opposes surrogacy. And as I said earlier, in the UK, commercial surrogacy isn't generally allowed. Contracts for commercial surrogacy aren't enforceable for the most part, but they still allow so-called altruistic surrogacy, where surrogates don't accept any payment outside of the expenses that are incurred during the pregnancy. But as you can see from the video, this model isn't much of an improvement over the commercial model. Altruistic surrogacy isn't remotely altruistic when you consider its impact on both the child and the mother. It's devastating and painful for the mother in ways that she must vividly understand. And it's devastating and painful for the child in ways that she cannot yet fully understand, but one day she will. And yet somehow it's likely that things are only going to get more and more deranged and dehumanizing from here as we continue to divorce human reproduction from its natural context. The ultimate dream, of course, for many on the left, is to one day make men into surrogates via implanted uteruses. Now, I don't know if this will ever be scientifically possible. It's not even close to scientifically possible right now. I doubt that it will ever be, as sustaining a pregnancy requires a lot more than just a uterus after all. But I do know what some trans activists plan to do with that power, should they ever be granted it. So here's one video which was surfaced recently by Robbie Starbuck that gives you an idea. Watch.
The first trans woman to have a successful uterus transplant, ovaries and eggs included, and I want to be the first trans woman to have an abortion. I will let a doctor who has successfully transplanted a uterine complex before cut the organs out of a willing, healthy, transmasculine donor, place them in my body. I will devote myself heart and soul to their aftercare. I will have as much gay sex as it takes with as many trans women as it takes, and let the transphobes and homophobes scratch their heads wondering what to make of it. And I want to be the first trans woman to have an abortion.
So he's grinning about killing a child and is quite excited about the possibility. And for the same reason that Leah Thomas grins while beating female swimmers and depriving them of their rightful accolades and opportunities, although this is a much darker version of it, obviously. But the reason is the same, which is that that he ascribes to an ideology of extreme pathological narcissism. It's reminiscent of the video of that WPATH expert that we played talking about turning people's genitals into abstract art. Above anything, everything else, these people cannot tolerate being told no. They simply have to believe that they can do anything that they want, that they can be the victors, the champions over human biology. And in that sense, the underlying ideas behind trans ideology and commercial surrogacy aren't that distinct. They're both premised on the idea that human beings can be and should be gods. They think people can invent their own genders just as easily as they can invent new ways for two men to have a child, quote unquote. But humans don't have the power to create new genders. Two men don't have the power to create a child and never will. No one has the authority to end an innocent human life. The commercial surrogacy industry, like so many other movements we've been told to accept over the past decade, is yet another step towards a dystopia that embraces delusions instead of rejecting them. And as we've seen before, if this is allowed to continue, many children will be irreparably damaged by it, if not killed. They'll be forced to suffer in order to appease narcissists and psychopaths. And as with the trans movement, women, the very people who are supposedly empowered by this approach, will again be the collateral damage. Now let's get to our five headlines. Sports betting with BetOnline can be intriguing, even if you're not a diehard sports fan. Beyond traditional sports, BetOnline gives you the option to bet on political events, whether it's predicting the outcome of the presidential election, if Hunter Biden will serve jail time before 2025, or who will be the next Republican speaker. Political betting allows you to wager on real-world events outside the realm of sports. If you're a diehard sports fan, BetOnline makes sports betting more accessible and convenient than ever before. With just a few clicks, you can place bets on your favorite teams or events from the comfort of your own home. BetOnline prides themselves on their higher-than-average betting limits of up to $25,000, and you can increase your wagering amounts by contacting their player services desk by phone or email. So while you're watching your favorite team or the news on upcoming elections, why not spice things up with a friendly wager with BetOnline? Go to betonline.ag to place your bets today. Use promo code Walsh for a 50% instant deposit bonus of up to $1,000. That's betonline.ag and use promo code Walsh. BetOnline, the options are endless. Okay, I want to begin here and spend a little bit of time on this because The Daily Show did a segment on DEI this week. The host was Charlemagne the God. Because I don't know if he's, it seems like The Daily Show has 340 hosts now. I'm not sure what's going on. Also, as a side note, I don't know how this guy gets away with calling himself the God, and we all just go along with it. And that's even when there's articles written about him, that name is, it's like used like that's his proper Christian name. Now, I'm generally opposed to people giving themselves nicknames at all. I don't think that's the way nicknames should work, but you can't deify yourself with your nickname. Or at least you shouldn't be able to. So anyway, Charlemagne, we'll just stick with the first part of the name, was hosting, and he was talking about DEI and criticizing it. So he's criticizing DEI. And of course, as you would expect, because a guy on the left was criticizing something that people on the right also don't like. Many conservatives applauded this segment, shared the clips, celebrated Charlemagne for speaking out. You've maybe seen this clip being shared around and you've seen it on social media. And if you have seen it, it's probably because a conservative was retweeting it or reposting it. And with an amen and smiley emojis and everything else. Because supposedly we agree with the point that he's making. Now, Charlemagne does say that DEI is, quote, mostly garbage. And that's the quote that conservatives are repeating and applauding. But here is where I must once again remind my conservative friends that just because somebody on the left says one single sentence, not even a whole sentence, because the rest of the sentence, you know, the full sentence is DEI is well-intentioned, but mostly garbage. The first part of that sentence is completely wrong. We'll get to that in a moment. It's not well-intentioned. So he didn't even say a full sentence we agree with. He said one part of a sentence taken in isolation we agree with. But just because that happens, just because there is a sentence or a phrase that somebody on the left says that we think we agree with, that doesn't mean we should automatically applaud them and celebrate them. In fact, it doesn't even mean that we actually agree with the argument they're making. Just because there's one sentence in the argument that you agree with, it doesn't mean that you actually agree with the whole argument that he's actually making. Because somebody can say one sentence that you agree with in isolation, even in the context of an argument that you very much disagree with. But you have to actually listen to the whole context and then use your head also, which is something that conservatives maybe should start doing more often. So let's do that. Let's listen to some of this segment where the guy hosting The Daily Show, a liberal guy, is criticizing DEI. But why? Why is he criticizing it? What is his criticism of it exactly? Let's find out.
The truth about DEI is that although it's well-intentioned, it's mostly garbage, okay? It's kind of like the Black Little Mermaid. Just because racists hate it doesn't mean it's good. And you know I'm right, because every one of you has sat through one of those diversity training sessions and thought, this is bull. And it's not just you. Over 900 studies have shown that DEI programs don't make the workplace better for minorities. In fact, it can actually make things worse because of the backlash effect. The biggest failure of DEI is that the number of Black people in power at big companies is basically the same as it was 5 years ago. In fact, maybe the only thing that DEI has accomplished is giving racist white people cover to be openly racist. And honestly, I'm not surprised these programs didn't work. And here's why. It's just corporate PR. They want good vibes. And also, they want to cover their ass, okay? Did you know that if a company gets sued for civil rights violations, just having a DEI program will be counted as evidence in their favor, even if the program doesn't do okay? It's the I have a Black friend of the legal system, right? We don't need corporate DEI. Yes, we want diversity and equity and inclusion. Real DEI is only going to come from Black leadership. I don't know how to do it because I'm not a Black leader, but I do know how to tell if it's working. Just keep an eye on right-wing media. The more they're freaking out, the more progress we're making.
Okay, so let's review. Putting aside the fact that this guy's comedic rhythm is totally off, so he needs to work on that. Let's review the argument that Charlemagne is making. While the right claps like trained seals at SeaWorld, what is he actually saying? Well, you've got a bunch of conservatives posting this clip and saying, he makes some great points. Listen to him. He'll be voting for Donald Trump in no time. Okay, first of all, he says repeatedly that the right-wing critics of DEI are racists. And this is even more clear in the five-minute full segment. The whole segment is 5 minutes. Obviously, we're not going to play a five-minute segment. But he makes it very clear. In fact, he plays clips of conservative media figures talking about the problems with DEI, and he labels them all racist. Okay, so he specifically and repeatedly says that the reason conservatives criticize DEI is that they're all racist. And yet many conservatives, despite being called racist by this guy in that segment, still are sharing the segment and applauding it. So he's saying, you guys are a bunch of racist honkies. And they go, oh, wow, man. This liberal fella, you know, he's got a point. He makes a great point about how I'm a racist. It's pathetic. And what is the actual criticism of DEI that he's making? Is he criticizing the idea? Is he criticizing the concept? Is he criticizing the goal of DEI? No, not at all. In fact, he says that it's well-intentioned. He says we need DEI. He thinks we need it. His exact words. We need DEI. We need real DEI. Okay? So this is what he's doing. It's like the communism thing. Well, real DEI has never been tried. That is his whole argument, is that, yeah, it's not working, but we need real. This is fake DEI. We need the real stuff. That's what he's saying. Okay? His only problem with corporate DEI is that it has not effectively achieved the goal in his mind of enforcing diversity and inclusion. He's not saying that we shouldn't try to enforce diversity and inclusion. He's saying we need to do it more effectively and that this is not doing that. This is not accomplishing that. He uses an example of a corporation, you know, DEI, that where all the leaders are still white men or white people. So that's his point. Well, yeah, they have DEI, but these companies are still mostly run by white people. And so what's the solution? It's to have DEI in companies that are run by black people. It's to kick more of the white people out, replace them with black people, and then have DEI. That's what he's saying. That is the opposite of the point that we are making about DEI. He is making the opposite point of view. So if you're on the right and you have shared this clip, okay, and because you think he agrees with you. No, he's making the opposite point. It's not even just slightly different from your point. It is the opposite of your point. And in so doing, he's even calling you a racist. So he's saying you're totally wrong on this issue and you're a racist. So he disagrees with you absolutely and fundamentally on this issue. There is nothing here for us to applaud. I mean, this is like, it's like if somebody carjacks you and then his friend yells at the guy for carjacking you because he says that he should have stole your wallet also. That's why he's mad that, yeah, well, you carjacked guy. Why did you take his wallet? You kicked him out of the car and didn't take his wallet? What's wrong with you? And then it's like, if you listen to that and say, yeah, exactly. See, he gets it. He's defending me. No, you moron. You damned idiot. He's not he hates you more than the other guy. He wants to see something worse happen to you. So here's just to make this as kind of broad as and clear as possible. There's a bad thing that has happened. You want the bad thing to stop happening. He wants the bad thing to stop happening in order to be replaced by something worse. So that you're not on the same side. Okay, again, you're not even sort of on the same side. You could not be on more opposite sides of this particular issue. But that does require, I mean, it just requires an ability. First of all, it requires taking a fight. If you're going to, I'm so tired of people doing that. And I don't want to hear the excuses for anybody that posts this clip. Well, I didn't know. I didn't realize. It's 5 minutes long. I mean, just listen to it. Or you don't have to share it. You don't have to react. You could just say nothing about it. You don't, just because people are talking about a clip doesn't mean you have to say something about it. No one cares what your opinion is anyway. But if you feel like you have to say something, watch it first. And watch it and also listen. Don't just watch. Listen with your ears. Those are the things you're supposed to listen to things with. And it becomes very clear. So, and I know that I know we love the idea. We love the idea of the, the reasonable liberal guy, especially if the reasonable liberal is not white. We love that. We love that. We love the concept. We love the idea. We love the, we love the story of the reasonable liberal, the reasonable not white liberal in particular, who is coming to our defense and all. We love it. We love that. The only problem is that almost every time that is a fiction. Okay, almost every time, almost all the reasonable liberals out there That is a fiction. That's a story that we are telling ourselves. It's not true. And very often, what those reasonable liberals are doing is that they are at best or at worst, they're looking to repackage something. So the reasonable part of it, they're reasonable at all. It's they at least realize that, okay, this, you know, we've got this left wing agenda item, and they're saying to themselves, you know, our side is trying to push it through. It's not working. And so most of the time, the reasonable liberal, he's reasonable because he at least realizes that the thing isn't working, that it's not achieving the goal that they want to achieve. But he's not saying that we should get rid of it. He's saying, let's think of it. This is not a smart strategy. We got to think of a better way to do this. So those dummies over there don't realize, because those racist dummies over there, they're on to us. Those racist, troglodytes over there, they know what we're doing. And so we need to figure out a better way to go about this. That's 99% of the reasonable liberals that we hear about all the time. That is what they're doing. That is their goal. They do not fundamentally disagree with the left on pretty much anything. All right. Washington Examiner has this story. A 2-year-old proposal to ban menthol cigarettes may be delayed until after the 2024 election, as President Joe Biden weighs a move that could risk eroding his support within the black community. The Food and Drug Administration first proposed banning menthols and flavored cigars in April 2022, but has since missed two deadlines for finalizing the rule, the second of which expired at the end of March. The agency said in a statement, the FDA remains committed to issuing the tobacco product standards for menthol in cigarettes and characterizing flavors in cigars as expeditiously as possible, noting the process in its final stage. As we made clear, these product standards remain at the top of our priorities. But some observers say other priorities are behind the delay, namely the lack of support for the idea as the election sharpens into view. Biden's menthol ban has received praise from public health advocates who say it can save hundreds of thousands of lives. The tobacco industry is also accused of disproportionately targeting the black community with its marketing of menthol cigarettes. Now, of course, it's funny that a ban on menthol cigarettes is the thing that, supposedly will turn the black community against the Democrats in November, as if there aren't already 100 other reasons why that should happen. 100 other reasons for the black community specifically to hate Democrats. And the biggest reason is that Democrat leadership has absolutely ravaged and destroyed pretty much every predominantly black neighborhood in the country. Maybe we don't even need the qualifier pretty much there. Every predominantly black neighborhood in the country. And I normally reject the disproportionate impact argument. But in this case, it's true that black communities are disproportionately ruined by Democrat policies. And of course, the rub is that this is happening because black people keep voting for leaders who promise to make their lives worse at every turn. So this is a self-imposed problem in many ways, but it is a major problem. And, that's a very good argument for black people and all people to not vote Democrat. You don't have to like Trump. You don't have to have great faith in the average Republican politician. I don't have much faith in them, personally. But all you have to do is think to yourself, how exactly has my life been improved by Democrat policies and leadership? In what ways has my life been improved? And if you run that inventory in an honest way, you will discover very quickly that your life has not been improved at all, but in fact has been made measurably worse in myriad ways. So that should be the turning point here. Or maybe it'll be menthol cigarettes. I don't know. I guess whatever brings about the result is good. And putting the racial element aside for a moment, it's also just ridiculous that we are still talking about the dangers of tobacco products in a country with a drug overdose epidemic, fentanyl all over the streets, weed legalized everywhere, an obesity epidemic, and not just the obesity epidemic, but the fact that the very same people who rant and rave about tobacco products will tell us that we shouldn't be fat phobic and that we should be accepting of all body types. So all these various ways that the human body is being destroyed, and yet we're still supposed to see cigarettes as this special evil, I think is ridiculous. And with cigarettes, now you know that I don't often, I'm not often persuaded by the libertarian argument that, well, hey, this doesn't affect you, man. It's none of your business, doesn't affect you. But the reason why I'm usually not persuaded by it is that in most cases, when the libertarians say, this doesn't affect you, or when the liberals say this doesn't affect you, in most cases, it actually does. There actually is. We would go back to what we talked about at the beginning. Gay marriage, you know, one of the greatest examples of this. Doesn't affect you. Well, no, it turns out that trying to redefine, but as a result, obliterating the fundamental societal institution of marriage, it has a devastating impact on all of society. So if something reshapes society in a fundamental way, as a member of society, yes, I am affected by that because I'm a human and I live here too. So most of the time, or you know, when it comes to drug legalization, or as we've talked about recently, marijuana, like all these things, they have the effect of deteriorating these communities and society as a whole, which of course affects everybody that lives there. But with tobacco products in particular, this is one time when that argument would actually apply. It really doesn't. If you want to smoke cigarettes, it actually really doesn't have any impact. It genuinely has really no impact on anybody but you. The worst the rest of us have to deal with is the smell. But even that, I mean, the smokers are treated like such lepers these days. I mean, you could walk around smoking marijuana anywhere you want, vaping, whatever. But you know, cigarette smokers in particular are, you know, if you want to smoke a cigarette, we'll carve out a little space for you out in the cold, away all over there. There's a little circle. Everyone has to huddle together. So even the smell thing isn't an issue anymore. So it really is. You know, it's really your issue, and yeah, you'll probably suffer some health effects for it down the line. But this legitimately is an area where I don't see why it should be any interest of mine or the government's, whether someone wants to smoke cigarettes or not. All right, Postmillennial has this report from the Postmillennial on Thursday. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told reporters that Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Quote, Ukraine, the determination of every country represented here at NATO remains rock solid. We'll do everything we can. Allies will do everything that they can to ensure that Ukraine has what it needs to continue to deal with Russia's ongoing aggression against Ukraine, an aggression that gets worse with every passing day. Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Our purpose of the summit is to help build a bridge to that membership and to create a clear path for Ukraine moving forward. So that's what Antony Blinken said. Article 5 of NATO's treaty states that an armed attack against one or more NATO members in Europe or North America shall be considered an attack against them all. Russian President Vladimir Putin warned in February that NATO countries must, in the end, understand that all this truly threatens a conflict with the use of nuclear weapons and therefore the destruction of civilization. Okay, well, this is obviously total lunacy. The United States needs to leave NATO if Ukraine joins. We should leave NATO anyway. And this situation shows exactly why. Because this is psychotic. I mean, this is like supervillain levels of evil. Our government is run by people who would risk or directly bring about the deaths of millions of people, millions of Americans, for no reason, for no good reason anyway, for the sake of Ukraine, for the sake of some foreign corrupt government. I can't put into words how much I detest these people. To even talk about this right now is madness. To talk about it at all is madness. The whole thing. And of course, none of these people can explain how any of this is in our interest. How do we benefit by having Ukraine in NATO? How do we benefit by going to war, getting into a ground war with a nuclear power over Ukraine? Why should we care about Ukraine at all? I've been asking this since this latest conflict began. Still have not gotten an answer. Many others have been asking the same thing, of course. Why should we care? why should it matter to us? So when you tell me, oh, Ukraine's invaded, it's a, okay, I hear that, but why should I care? What has it to do with me? As an American citizen, as a father, a husband, all the things I have to worry about every day, any of us have to worry about, why in the hell should Ukraine make that list? Can anyone explain? Nobody can. And by the way, who's going to fight this war? You know, who's going to fight your war for Ukraine? Who fights it? There's already a military recruitment crisis in this country. What happens when joining the military means going over to die in a battle over some country that nobody in this country really cares about? And I don't care how many Ukraines in bio, you know, how many bios have Ukraine flags in it. Doesn't matter. No one in this country really cares about Ukraine. And yeah, I get it. Going overseas to die for some country nobody cares about. Like, it wouldn't be the first time, obviously. But at least with the pointless wars in the Middle East that, you know, we suffered through for the first two decades of this century, there was at least the claim that we were defending ourselves against terrorism or whatever. It wasn't true, but there was the claim. Okay? In this case, they aren't even making that claim. When you ask them, why should we do anything? Why should we lift a finger to help Ukraine? They don't even really, you know, sometimes they might try to make some really tortured argument about how it's in the best interest of our national security or whatever. But most of the time, they don't even say that. They just say that, oh, Ukraine should be free. The poor Ukrainians need our help. We should be nice to them. Who's signing up for that? Well, nobody is, and that's the point. And that's why they still have the conscription button that they can push. And if this Ukraine stuff leads to a war, which means a world war, we will see the reinstatement of the draft. I mean, it's guaranteed because it's the only way they'll be able to get people to fight. And I'll tell you this right now. If any or all of my four sons are 18 or over at that point, that's when I tap out. Like, that's when we tap out. That's when I'm done with America. Goodbye. My sons aren't going to die on foreign soil at the behest of these damn psychopaths for the sake of some foreign government, some conflict that they have nothing to do with. Not happening. It's just not going to happen. And I'm packing up my family and we're moving somewhere. I mean, it's a world war, it's kind of hard to find somewhere to go that way you'll be safe from it. But I don't know. Some island in the Pacific somewhere, anywhere. You know, my oldest son and I, we've always talked about wanting to go explore the Amazon together. And my wife, by the way, loves this plan that I've hatched. And maybe we all go do that. Maybe we move into the jungle. I don't know. Because you know what? I'd rather die there than have my children die for Ukraine or any other foreign country, honestly. It's just, that's it. And I'll tell you something else. I'm not the only one who feels that way. Tried conscripting people's children for this, it's not going to end well. And in the meanwhile, like I said, they haven't even bothered. This is how little respect they have for us. So that they haven't even bothered. It's one thing, you know, I hate it when obviously politicians lie to us. But at least when they lie to us, and there are plenty of lies being told about Ukraine, but at least when they lie to us, there's a certain amount of respect that they feel like they have to, right? Because they're worried to some extent about us finding out the truth. It's even worse when they don't even bother to lie in some ways. And so that's the thing with Ukraine shipping. We've shipped, of course, billions and millions of dollars over there already. It's like they haven't even come up with a compelling lie to explain to us. Like, oh, no, in order for you to be safe and for your family to be safe, we have to do this. Maybe eventually they'll come up with that lie, but they haven't yet. Instead, it's all just, yeah, it's for their sake. We're doing it for the Ukrainians. I don't care. I'm sorry, I don't care about Ukraine at all. I said this from the beginning. If Ukraine as a country ceased to exist tomorrow, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't lose an ounce of a second of sleep over it. I'd sleep like a baby. I'd be perfectly fine. I don't care if Ukraine exists or not. Why should I? I wouldn't even notice. Okay, that's the thing. You take the information age. We all know everything, but take that out of it. If it wasn't for the internet and the media obsessing over it, if Ukraine just like was invaded by Russia and ceased to exist as a country, you'd live your whole life and never know it. You would never know that it happened because it has zero impact on you. And anyone who says that, well, that's cruel. That's how could you not care? How countries all over the world being invaded constantly, fighting over borders and stuff, countries, you know, ceasing to exist, countries coming into existence. You don't care about any of that. You don't care about any of it. If you're a mainstream media consumer, you only care when the media comes along and says, all those conflicts and everything, people dying and all these terrible things happening all over the globe every single day. You don't care about any of it. You don't think about any of it. You never stop for a second to consider any of it at all. Well, here's one little example. Here's one conflict happening across this entire violent globe of ours that you should care about. This one here. If you pretend to care at all, it's only when the media does that. At least I have the honest. At least I can be honest about it and say I just don't. I don't care. I can't. We are not capable of caring deeply about every single thing that happens in the entire world. We are, as much as we might want to be, we are not gods. Okay, we are not omniscient. We are not capable of infinite mercy. And knowing everything and caring deeply about everything that happens all the time. We're human beings. We have a sort of a limited scope of influence. You know, we have our little corners of existence, and that's where our focus is supposed to be. You can't do anything about most of what is happening all across the world. And there's no point in caring that much about it, frankly. All right, let's get to the comment section. If you're a man, it's required that you grow a beard. Hey, we're the Sweet Baby Gang. Okay, maybe this is supposed to be Was Walsh Wrong, actually. I don't know if this is the right segment, because here's some... Of course, we announced my new court show called Judged, which is premiering April 9th. That's on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. And it is, needless to say, going to be not only the greatest thing the Daily Wire has ever done, but many people are already saying it looks like it's going to be the most important television program that's ever been produced. I've heard many people, I couldn't give you specific examples, I've just heard it. I've been out and I've heard a lot of people saying this. Well, you just hear it. You know, but there have been a few who have had some criticisms and of the new show, even though they haven't seen it yet. So we'll read a couple of those. Matthew says, the most hilarious part of this is that these are the same people who say judges that rule against Trump and his cronies are making a mockery of the judicial system. Well, yes, those people are making a mockery of the judicial system, Matthew, but you're obviously implying that that's what we're doing with this show. That's what I'm doing. But how could I? It's an absurd claim. It's absurd to say that I'm making a mockery of anything. How could I make a mockery of the judicial system? I can't. I'm a member of the judicial system. Make a mockery of it. I'm the most celebrated and distinguished judge in the country. And yet I'm making a mockery of the judicial system? It's ridiculous. Dan says, par for the course with Con Inc. What's next? Real World Daily Wire. That is sir, I would appreciate if you don't spoil my next pitch meeting, but it's actually not a bad idea. Another one says, Matt Walsh is very easy to understand when you realize that his entire life is animated by insecurity about his total lack of academic and professor achievement. Academic and professor achievement. Did you mean to say professional achievement? Anyway, this show is clearly an excuse for him to cosplay as a high-achieving professional. I don't know how. I think it's, again, this is absurd. It's an absurd claim that me, of all people, that I could have a lack of, I assume you meant professional achievement. Do I have to run through my resume again for you? Apparently I do. Best-selling, critically acclaimed children's author, women's studies scholar, judge. Those are three right there. That's a partial list. Finally, Filthy Heathen Kirk says, I find it weird how Ben Shapiro went to Harvard Law, but somehow Matt Walsh is the first DW personality to be a judge. Because I didn't, look, here's what I've found from my experience so far, from my many hours spent on the bench. What I've found is that, yeah, I didn't go to law school like Ben Shapiro. I didn't go to quote unquote college at all. I've never read any legal textbooks. Okay. I couldn't cite really almost any court. The number of court cases I could cite off the top of my head are three of them, maybe. But that's because that's not what being a judge is all about, I've found. There's something, you tap into something deeper and more primal. And also in my courtroom, the Constitution doesn't apply. Basic human rights are not respected. It's entirely governed by my own whims. So what do I need law school for that? When you want the best tickets at any sporting event or concert, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. And similarly, if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. The best way to do that is with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter helps you find qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Walsh. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology shows you qualified people for that role. Once you've reviewed your list of qualified candidates, you can swiftly invite your top choices to apply. This streamlined process encourages them to apply sooner, allowing you to fill that role faster. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best talent fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Walsh and try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Walsh. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Well, as we just discussed, it's no secret that my list of personal and professional accomplishments are both expansive and, for so many, enviable. Theocratic fascist, hit podcast host, best-selling children's author, acclaimed actor. The truth is, all of these things were mere stepping stones on the road to my true calling. In my new series, Judged by Matt Walsh, premiering April 9th on Daily Wire Plus, real plaintiffs will stand before me with real cases. Would a jury of peers be less painful for these petty claims? Absolutely. Would it be as entertaining, however? Absolutely not. Take a look at the official trailer for my new series, Judged by Matt Walsh, now.
All rise for the Honorable Judge Walsh.
Please be seated. Ms. Goldstein. Mr. Bentley. Mr. Outerbridge. Ms. Spicer.
Your Honor.
Mr. Barney.
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Singh.
Yeah. At 30,000 feet, my lips exploded.
Why would I pay rent to somebody who had sex with my sister?
A dog bit my finger.
He's allergic, like the grass.
If he didn't want me to drive the car, he would have took the key. I had it with him.
Has anyone told you you're the worst negotiator that's ever lived? I've never been more annoyed than I am in this moment. Not even close. That does it. Please get the hell out of my courtroom. If you thought our current court system was a joke, wait until you experience real petty court, where everything you say can and certainly will be held against you by me. Judged by Matt Walsh premieres Tuesday, April 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern on Daily Wire Plus. Now let's get to our daily cancellation. You know, one of the fun things about being a left-wing journalist, it seems, is that you get to play Mad Libs every day. In fact, your whole career is one giant game of Mad Libs. What was once a fun, silly game for children is now your entire profession. And that's how we end up with headlines like this one from The Independent. And this headline, it is, I assure you, completely real. It seems so much like a parody that I had to verify it like three times to make sure that I'm not accidentally dedicating a daily cancellation segment to a Babylon Bee satire. But this is no parody, at least not an intentional one. So here it is. How climate change is hitting vulnerable Indonesian trans sex workers. Now, I assumed that they generate these headlines through a Mad Lib style game of fill in the blanks. But now that I read it again, I'm wondering if this is more of a sort of a throwing darts at a dartboard situation. So I'm imagining three different dartboards, and one has a selection of cataclysmic existential threats, you know, climate change, racism, income inequality, Donald Trump, et cetera. The other has the magical protected groups, black people, fat people, trans people, women, migrants, disabled people, and so on. And then there's one more dartboard, an optional third category to spice things up a bit, with an array of special professions like teachers, journalists, prostitutes, Hollywood actors, and then a number of even more, maybe like specific, very specific and sort of smaller job categories. So you throw a dart at each board and you see where it lands, and then you have your article. And you could even throw multiple darts at each board to make it more sort of a niche. And the options are endless, you know? How racism is impacting gay black DoorDash drivers. How Donald Trump is causing income inequality among disabled migrant teachers. How fat phobia is traumatizing bisexual women in Hollywood. You know, the combinations are nearly endless. And this time around, the darts landed on climate change, trans, sex workers, and Indonesian. Apparently, there's a fourth dartboard with a list of nationalities. So let's read a little bit of this article. And I know that you, you know, have likely been awake at night, tossing and turning, anxious, fretting, worried about how inclement weather might be affecting Indonesian prostitutes. And, well, here's your answer. Reading now. Says, Joya Patia, a 43-year-old Indonesian transgender woman, first started to notice that changing weather patterns in the mountain-ringed city of Bandung were affecting her income as a sex worker a decade ago. The rainy season was lasting longer across the West Java province. Winds were stronger, and in particularly bad years, Patia lost up to 80% of her earnings. Trans women like Patia are among the most affected by extreme weather linked to climate change, as well as suffering disproportionately when disaster strikes. Quote, no one is coming out during the longer rainy season. It's very hard to make money during that unpredictable weather. The Indonesian government has a 5-year plan setting out its development objectives and how it will manage the impact of climate change. And although this includes provisions for vulnerable groups, trans people are not listed among them. Some trans women are seeking to find their own solution. To raise awareness about climate change, Sangar Saroja puts on movie nights and fashion shows and hosts discussions with other queer communities. The group also surveyed 80 members of the trans community in Jakarta to find out how climate change affected incomes, frequency of illness, and changes in spending from 2021 to 2022. Nearly 93% of respondents saw decreased income during the rainy season, and 72% had increased expenses. Okay, so that's the story. Deserving of a headline in a major global news publication, no doubt. Apparently, prostitutes are inconvenienced by rain. Now, trans prostitutes are inconvenienced the most somehow for reasons that are never explained. I admit that I actually found this element of the story a bit surprising. Does business slow down all that much for prostitutes when it rains? Perhaps so. I couldn't say. It's far outside my own area of expertise. But if you're the kind of person who likes to go trawling in the streets of the third world for prostitutes, I wouldn't think you'd be dissuaded by a bit of rain. Like if you're in Indonesia and you're saying to yourself, you know, I want to go down to this filthy street corner here and you know, find a prostitute. Are you really going to look out your window and say, ah, it's raining, never mind. Forget it. I only look for impoverished third world prostitutes when it's sunny out. You know, you think like a poncho and an umbrella would seem to solve the problem, but I don't know. Besides, if the whole idea is that prostitutes, trans prostitutes in particular, are especially burdened by bad weather because they work outdoors, you would think that this is a concern that would apply to a huge number of Indonesians, including those many Indonesians who perform actual productive labor. I mean, tens of millions of people in the country work in industries like agriculture, forestry, mining, fishing, tourism. I mean, regular tourism, not sex tourism. And all of those industries and many more are greatly impacted by weather conditions. And one would think that they are even more impacted than prostitutes. Meanwhile, they are, again, performing actual productive and important jobs, but they don't even get a mention in The Independent because the Independent is a left-wing rag and left-wing rags hate nothing so much as productive, normal people. But this is all a bit of a moot point because you may notice that the writer of this article never bothers to provide any evidence supporting the foundational premise which is that climate change has made the weather measurably worse in Indonesia. After all, Indonesia has always had a rainy season for Indonesian prostitutes and everyone else in the country, but who cares about them, to contend with. And the rainy season, is the rainy season really that much rainier now? We're given no information to support that assertion. The only data point provided is that one 43-year-old trans prostitute thinks that it seems like it rains more now than it did 10 years ago. The anecdotal observation of a single middle-aged prostitute is all the evidence we're given. This is how science is done, apparently. Now, far be it for me to question this prostitute's meteorological expertise, but I did feel the need to cross-reference the claim. And so here's a chart from Statista.com that shows annual rainfall totals in Indonesia from 1901 to 2020. And as you can see, leaving aside one big spike in 2010, the totals have been pretty consistent over the past century or so. You know, they had 3,073 millimeters in 1910 and 3,096 in 2020. That's a difference of about 1 inch of rainfall total in the whole year. A difference so minuscule that not even a trans prostitute could possibly detect it. So the whole premise of the article is totally fake and made up, which is probably all that needed to be said about any of this, if anything needed to be said at all, which it didn't. And that is ultimately the reason why The Independent is today canceled. That'll do it for the show today and this week. Have a great weekend. Talk to you on Monday. Godspeed.